is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into a Football Friday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you live in downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino. We are nearing the finish line of summer already. NFL training camps, a handful of teams are going to have those get underway in just over a week. College football 43 days away from game one there. Media days across the country ongoing, including Mike right here at Circa Resort and Casino. The Mountain West was here over the last couple of days.
They were for the second year. They did their football media days here. If you had a chance to see it, or if you haven't, there's some great photos on Twitter. They built their set right here in what we call the underhang, directly above the sports book. So they had the background. And I don't know if you were watching it all, Stormy, but the way they set up the two shots, right? The two shot with Jesse and Bridget. I mean, the VSiN logo was right between them with the studio in the background. And then whether the players or the coaches were on their one shot, you had the odds boards on the right. So it looked terrific. There was a lot of work that went into figuring it out, but they said, look, we want to try to move from the convention area for our main stage for our network broadcast down into the casino and incorporate your sports theme. How can we do it? You know, and we talked about it because they wanted the screen. So the logo of the team that was on stage would be the background, but they targeted 2 weeks. So originally we thought they were going to be here next week, which was MLB All-Star Week. So we said, oh, you can have the whole screen. There's no sports going on. The soccer tournaments are over. Like for 3 days, there's nothing. They ended up with this week, which works out because the Big 12 was here. And I think there's an economy to writers in that, getting to cover both in the same time, travel budgets being what they are now. So I think that all worked out. I think we're willing to give them the access that a lot of other places won't. And we're willing to try and do stuff, right? I mean, Boise State says we want Jonah Dalmas to try to kick a long field goal at Stadium Swim, you know?
You said you were down there for that, right?
I was there. It was hot. But they did it right because the closer to the screen, the better to block the wind. Because the Stadium Swim, as you know, can be quite breezy. And I think if they would have done it further up on the deck, the wind would have really been pushed to his right, crosswind. But he kicked from right in front of the bathrooms on the lower left as you're looking at the screen to a field goal posts that were set up above the hot tub on the other side in front of the owner's suite. So the first one, and he was kicking cold, like he hasn't been kicking, right? So he missed it just a little bit wide right, and then he nailed the second one, nailed the third one. The second one would have probably been good for 70. If that was 60, it would have been good from 70.
I think we got video there. Great.
I think they did measure, and it was like 53 and a half yards, actually, the goalpost.
So cool. Dalmas and the Boise State Broncos, by the way, favorites to win the Mountain West. But kudos to the league for doing something different, stepping out of the box. Because to your point, Big 12 Media Days was here in Las Vegas, out at Allegiant Stadium where the Raiders play. Yet I feel like the talk of the week was the fact that the Mountain West is doing their thing in the sports book here. Yeah. Dalmas out there kicking a 60-yarder at Stadium Swim. Like, a lot of conversation was around this property and around that league. And they know, they're well aware that they're not one of the power leagues, but trying to make a name for themselves and stand out in a different way.
Well, look, they've got Boise's a real legitimate candidate for the playoff, the expanded playoff. I know we're going to have Professor Aaron Moore on in the second hour from Rider. I know one of his talking points is about Liberty, that he likes Liberty, which is the shortest shot.
Which I think that'll be a great conversation because you and I have talked about this. I'm not on board with it.
No, yeah. You got me to take a hard look at Boise with the qualm thing a few weeks ago or last week. So, and it's an interesting discussion. I also want to ask Professor Moore about, I mean, obviously this rookie of the year race in the WNBA is the sports headlines every night. What happened next? They fed the ball to Angel 11 straight possessions so she could get her double-double, meanwhile blew the game, went from 6 down to 20 down, and Camille Cardoso was having a great game, sat on the bench and wouldn't put her back in. I mean, it's like the fix is in. But I want to ask Professor Moore about, what does he know about the makeup of the people that vote on these awards? Because they're wildly different in each sport, right? Some sports, 12 people vote, 900 for the high. I mean, it's just different. And who are they? Are they the beat writers? Are they former players? Who is it? Because he does a great job not only at identifying future tickets and then monetizing them, but also handicapping electorates when doing those year-long awards like the Heisman and that, and how you handicap and what and trends that those that vote for it have shown in the past. So, yeah, it was a success. Obviously, we'd like them to stay. I know there's others, especially MGM, pushing to try to get their Mountain West Media Days next year. I think Las Vegas is really going to be a central home for them in playing their championships, not just basketball, you know, at Thomas and Mack, and football at Allegiant, but the other sports, the golf, the soccer, you know, tennis, those type of things, that they could do here as well and kind of make Vegas their central
home base, right, yeah, right,
for their championships.
Also on the main screen, I know they didn't have the full main screen, yeah, but I thought it looked cooler, honestly, that they didn't, mm-hmm, that you had the helmet or whatever graphic integration, yeah, that they had, and then around it you had, yeah, all of these games. It looked great. So again, kudos to the league, kudos to you guys to help put that together, because I know that it is a heavy lift. Also, real quickly, because you mentioned Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark is still a large odds on favorite to be rookie of the year in the WNBA, but Reese's odds continue to shrink, it feels like, each and every day as we get closer. Speaking of rookies, I know I said that this was a football Friday, but how about the rookie for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Paul Skeens, yesterday? Okay, so the rookie phenom, by the way, he has 11 strikeouts, one walk, and a win against the Brewers. He's pulled after 7 no-hit innings, fewer than 100 pitches. What are your thoughts on this? Because I know this is a very big talk radio comment, but mm-hmm, I feel like there's a lot of fans all over the country that are like, come on, man, just give him a shot to go back out there with 99 pitches under your belt.
And he had a short seventh. That's the thing too, right? He got going into the seventh, I thought there's no way, because he's trending to 120 pitches. But then he has, what, a 7 or 8 pitch seventh inning. And maybe, you know, Shelton said he saw it. He just saw he was physically tired. A lot of that has to do with high leverage spots too. And it's easier to let a guy go let's say they were up 5-0, because there's less high leverage spots. But in a game that was 0-0 and then 1-0, there's more. I know Paul Howard was tweeting about it. I was texting with him. He was, you know, upset. He says, what if the kid never gets another shot at a no-hitter? What if he never has 7 no-hit innings the rest of his career?
That's a very real thing, right? Maybe not for someone like him, but how often do people get that shot? It doesn't happen every day.
From a betting perspective, I like it. I took a very small slice of him at 40-1 to win $1,000. This is back when we were trying to get Mitch to go in, and he said he can't get there on skiing. So we bust his balls every start, but he still can't get there. And now he's, what, down to 15-1 or something like that? It went from 25-1 to 15-1 yesterday.
So on DraftKings, it's now 7-1.
Well.
It went down again. His NL Rookie of the Year odds also jumped from -350 to $7.
The problem is the innings. He doesn't like qualifying a lot of these statistics because he hasn't got enough innings. But he will. Especially we've seen him now. His first few starts, the first start was the only one he didn't go 5. That one against the Cubs in the rain delay. But then it was 5, 5, 5, now 6. Now he's going 7 pretty regularly, or getting into the 7th. He'll get there with the innings. When you look at this market, will Sale stay healthy? That's a big question mark. Glasnow finally faded. I kept saying there was value in the market because Glasnow and Wheeler were co-favorites. Mm-hmm. And Glasnow had been very average for 2 months. Wheeler's probably deserving of it. 150 is too short. 160 is too short on Sale. I wouldn't bet Skeens at 7-1. I mean, obviously I bet him at a big number. I think that's low. Reynaldo Lopez is interesting at 35-1. I think he should probably be closer to 15-1. The other thing about Skeens yesterday, and I wasn't as passionate about him being taken out of the game maybe as others. I know Troy Lovello announced late yesterday, early this morning, Skeens is going to start the All-Star game. I wonder if they didn't know that already. I wonder if Skeens and Shelton didn't know that already, that he was going to start and that would be a big spot for him. And he didn't want to go out there and blow out his arm trying to get this no-hitter to the point where he wouldn't be ready on Tuesday. I know it's, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, Monday, 5 days rest. But I wonder if that factored in the decision at all. And that they knew, hey, they're going to give this kid a shot to start as a rookie in an All-Star game. And I'm not going to blow it by running him out there for 120 pitches for a no-hitter.
I can see that. Maybe not fully knowing, yeah, but hoping that, yeah, that could be the case because of all the conversation around it. Only 4 rookie pitchers have been selected to start the All-Star game ever. None since 1995. His 11 starts also would be tied for the fewest ever for an All-Star starting pitcher. And speaking of, like, let's just go through his numbers here quickly. 11 starts this season. He's 6-0 in win-loss column. 1.90 ERA. His 89 strikeouts are the most in baseball since his debut and most for a pitcher with a sub-2 ERA through 11 career starts since 1913. 8 starts with at least 7 strikeouts. He's struck out 34.9% of the batters he's faced. Like, you could go on and on and on about what he's doing so young in his career. When is the regression coming? That's what we talk about so much, especially with pitcher. You're bound to have a bad outing one day, and we haven't really seen a bad performance.
A friend of mine texted me yesterday morning, and he says he's got to have a bad start somewhere. He said, I'm just going to take a small shot on Milwaukee today. One of these starts is going to be bad. And I said, I can't get there because it's Savali. I hate Aaron Savali. I just have never loved a bet on him. I always thought he was the weak link in the Guardians rotation. Didn't like him when he went to Tampa. Anyhow, so I didn't. I said, maybe you can convince me to bet an over. Obviously, that was a joke, 1-0. But the thing that impresses me, Stormy, is when he doesn't have his best control and his best stuff, he's still able to fight his way through these innings. He against the Mets in Pittsburgh, he clearly didn't have his control. He fought his way through. They won that game. They scored a bunch. And in Atlanta, what was it, 2 Saturdays ago, I mean, he clearly didn't have his best stuff. I think he had the bases loaded 4 out of the 6 innings, but he fought his way out, only gave up 1 run. Like, he's able to battle his way through. I know people say at LSU, he threw 125, 130 pitches routinely, right? It's not like he hasn't done that before.
He went over 120, I think, like 15 times.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that they were saying why he couldn't, you know, he had another 40 pitches to go and give him a shot in that spot. So hopefully he'll get another chance, right, at something like this.
I did want to ask just real quickly before the break, how do you feel about opposing fans cheering for a pit? Like, I understand if he completed the game and had a no-hitter, but if he's walking off the field after 7, are we giving him a round of applause for that if you're a true Brewers fan?
I think you, as a baseball fan, you appreciate excellence.
Okay.
And I have no offense to that.
Maybe it's because I'm not as in mm-hmm. baseball, but I think of like from a football standpoint, you're never going to catch me standing up and,
different.
You know, it's a very different thing.
Soccer
it feels like.
Soccer fans wouldn't do that either.
Yeah. Right. Okay. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line, but still to come, Aaron Rodgers said what to who? Plus Dan Lieberfeld of Jets Confidential will weigh in a little bit later. Also, as Mike mentioned, in hour two, we're going to get into a little college football with Aaron Moore, the professor himself. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than a month, and lucky for you, the VSiN experts have been hard at work all offseason putting together our new VSiN NFL betting guide. We've got comprehensive team profiles with power ratings and win total projections, proven betting systems and trends like how to win with betting splits, plus top picks for season win totals, futures, props, and awards like the MVP and Rookie of the Year. To access this guide, though, you do need to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. And right now, when you use our promo code Lombardi, we're offering a great deal. Instead of the usual $240 price, you can get VSiN Pro and access to everything we do for just $199. And when you use that promo code, we're throwing in an extra month for free as well. So you get the guide. You get 13 months of access to everything we do, including the best bets, the round-the-clock video content, and so much more. All you need to do, head to vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. Promo code Lombardi. As we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We are 11 days out from the New York Jets beginning their training camp. Another day, another headline around Aaron Rodgers off the field. He's on the course in Lake Tahoe for the American Century Championship this week. And for a guy, Mike, who said, let's try to avoid distractions, he seems to create a lot of them for himself. Here's what he had to say when asked about his former teammate, Devontae Adams.
You think Luke Getsy's going to utilize Devontae Adams good in the new Raiders offense?
I love Luke Getsy. He's a fantastic coach.
Awesome.
And I love Devontae. I can't wait to play with him again.
Great. Love to hear it.
Okay. What'd you make of that?
I don't know how much to take seriously and what he's trying to say and what his message is out there for all of what he's doing. At this point, I think it's all noise. I just have to tune all of it out and wait to see them on the field this year, which I have my doubts. It was interesting, you know, we were going to do our top 5 passer ratings. I didn't like even consider putting him in the top 5 because I have no idea what the product is going to be.
Sure.
I have no idea.
It's a fair question.
They're a circus. The whole organization is a circus, and he doesn't really do anything to help it.
As Mike alluded to, later on in the show, we are going to rank our top 5 quarterbacks because Tyreek Hill had a very interesting top 5 himself. But to stick on Rodgers here, it makes me laugh because a guy, again, who has made a point of saying there are too many distractions around this team, let's make it all about football. He's like the biggest hypocrite of all time when it comes to that. And then you have this comment, doubled down with all of the other stuff and him having the unexcused absence and going to Egypt instead. You know, there's just a lot of interesting things here for a guy who has talked about not having distractions. Obviously, he and Davante Adams played 8 seasons together in Green Bay to great success. This is something that is a financial impossibility for the Jets to do right now. So it's just media catnip, right? Yeah, and he knows what he's doing.
Exactly. It's not, how do you take any of that seriously? Yeah. He's creating a story where he said he's not going to be creating stories. So
yeah. And to your point about seeing what this is going to look like on the field, obviously all the talent in the world, tons of weapons. This is an offensive line last year that allowed 64, 65 sacks in that range, had 13 different O-line combinations. It feels like they've upgraded that with the pieces that they have brought in. But ultimately, how are they going to stand up? I'm very curious to see that unit on the field, see if they can protect the way that they've led us to believe they can this year.
He had the benefit of a line that kept him out of harm's way in Green Bay and allowed him. Now, he wasn't necessarily much under duress in his tenure there. I wonder how he'll be. We don't know. We saw 4 snaps. But it's very interesting. I was listening to Colin Cowherd do a piece on Caitlin Clark and the turnovers, right? She set the all-time season record now. We're just barely past the halfway point. Broken. The person who had it, Nikki McCray, who was a great player right out of Tennessee in 1998 or 90, whatever it was, or the dawn of the WNBA. But he was drawing the comparison, when you're productive, don't focus on the turnovers. Like, great quarterbacks, if they turn the ball over, it's okay as long as they're still productive. And he was also talking about, the main comparison was Andrew Luck as a rookie, who produced with no other Pro Bowlers around him. And they said, oh, I bet he had this many, you know, interceptions. Mm-hmm. The other end of the spectrum was Aaron Rodgers, who's very careful and protects that statistic. And if he throws an interception early in a game, he becomes extremely careful the rest of the game because he doesn't want to have a multi-interception game. Well, if he's under duress all the time, I'm going to say, how is he going to handle that if he's still going to cherish the turnover?
All reports from a health standpoint, at least right now, are that he's fully healthy. No. He's going to be full go at the start of training camp.
Physically healthy.
From an odd standpoint, the Jets are the second shortest shot in the AFC East, +190, 11-1 to make the AFC, to win the AFC, -160 to make the playoffs, +135 to miss. For Rodgers specifically, he's the favorite for comeback player of the year. He's 8th on the odds board for MVP. I was also looking at some of his, just the passing props, passing touchdowns props he has. The yardage at 3,800.5, the passing touchdowns at 26.5. His last season in Green Bay had 3,795 pass yards and 26 touchdowns in 7 games. But if you go through his like historic seasons prior to that, every season he's played 15 games or more, so a 12-year span of him being healthy, went over that yardage. 10 of the 12 yards he went over the touchdowns. In the 2 years he did not go over the touchdowns, he had 26 or 25. So if you do think he can stay healthy, I think overs at plus money in both of those markets are where you would want to go. But it's, do you think he can play 16 plus games?
Yeah, I would go over on the touchdowns before I would go over on the yards. Okay. Because I think they will, you know, when they get to the red zone, I think they're going to use play action a lot and rely on him because of his good decision making, that he's not going to turn the ball over in those spots and throw the ball more often than most. So I would lean touchdowns if you wanted to bet one of them. If you're positive on him and think he'll remain healthy and play a full schedule, I would do the touchdown prop.
It's +105 to the over, 26 and a half touchdowns, +130 to the over on the yardage. Now, speaking of Davante Adams, well, Aaron Rodgers is no longer his quarterback. There are some quarterback questions out here in Vegas, and he was asked about the QB situation for his team. Aiden O'Connell had a handful of starts last year after Jimmy Garoppolo was ultimately benched, but the team also brings in Gardner Minshew. Here's Davante Adams' thoughts on where that QB competition currently sits.
I want whoever's going to look the best, you know, when it's time to when it's live bullets. So at the end of the day, I don't have a preference other than the fact that I want somebody that's confident and ready to go when it's time to do it. So whoever that is, that's who I want throwing the ball. I think right now, if I had to say, I think Aiden has the job because, you know, obviously he was here before and that's the way that it was. He was running with the ones more, and until Gardner comes in and, you know, takes the job away from him, I think it's Aiden's job right now.
That sound compliments of speak on FS1, but to him, it's Aiden's job right now.
I thought the interesting part of his comment was about Jimmy getting benched and he signed off on it because they needed a change. Like, is he implying that they came to him and said, what do you think about this decision? We're going to should we make a change? Or is he saying after the fact he was okay with it? That's an interesting comment to me.
It is an interesting comment. That comment, by the way, I don't know if you've seen any of the Netflix wide receiver series that came out. I've not through it yet, but I've watched a couple and it's awesome. Like Netflix doing a really good job last year with quarterback, now with wide receiver. But to your point, I wonder if, because I think that could be very possible with, at that time, Antonio Pierce taking over, making that decision, asking for feedback from the star wide receiver would make sense.
Yeah, and very much a player's coach, player and all that. It's interesting, the dynamic. I guess, you know, in light of the comments and when Seth sent the rundown, I looked a little bit more into, I guess his O'Connell stats aren't that awful. But to the eye test, it just doesn't look to me like he's going to be a winning quarterback. And then I went 5-5 in his starts. Passer rating's about 10 points below average, 12-7, touchdown interceptions, threw for 220 a game. I mean, they're not awful, but if you watch the games, he doesn't inspire confidence in that he's going to take a team and win a game with it. I mean, they got the lead in Kansas City off the two touchdowns in 30 seconds, right? And then never threw another pass. That tells you what they think of it. It wasn't horrific weather conditions that they, right? They just, they never completed another pass after the first quarter.
That was a very interesting.
And I go back to this Dan game in Indianapolis because I thought they had the momentum to make a wild card there. I believe they had fourth and one or two, five different times in that game at their own 45 or further down. I think three of them were, and they just kept punting the ball. They wouldn't even go for it. It's just, it's such a lack of a confidence in your offense. And I think that, that trickles down through the whole team. So that's why I just, it's hard for me to say, well, we're going into the season with Aiden O'Connell.
Sure. I'm with you there. You're right about the stats, though. We had Matt Eumanns on not too long ago, and he did the blind comparison between Aiden O'Connell's last four or five games, whatever it was, and Trevor Lawrence's. And the numbers for O'Connell were like dramatically better. But to your, the eye test looks different. And when you look at the eye test for Gardner Minshew, what do you think there? And obviously they paid him to come.
Look, I always think Minshew's a guy that's like a spark plug, a little bit like Fitzpatrick, right? He can come in and give you six, seven games and throw, you know, he'll have a couple 300-yard games and win some games for you. I don't know if he's the answer long term because we really haven't seen him go through lead a team a whole season. I'm not sure. You know, we hung out with him. He came here about a year and a half ago and we had some beers. A hell of a guy. Great guy to hang out with.
He looks like he would be a good time. I don't think anybody doubts that.
If I'm the Raiders, you paid him, I would think that it's his job. I would be the opposite of, I wouldn't have anything to do with incumbency with O'Connell.
That's how I thought as well. I know the reports were that these two have split snaps with the starters during offseason teamwork. That's the expectation to begin training camp as well. And we'll just see who wins the job. The Raiders are the third shortest shot in the West, which actually means they're the third longest, but there's that. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on this Football Friday edition of the Lombardi Line, live from downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino, real quickly to put some odds to the conversation that we had in the last segment of who will be the starting quarterback from day one for the Las Vegas Raiders. It appears Gardner Minshew currently sitting minus 135, Aiden O'Connell plus 110. So keep those thoughts in mind with Davante Adams saying that for him, it's Aiden O'Connell's job right now. Speaking of Davante Adams, Aaron Rodgers had something to say about him yesterday at the American Century Championship. We played the sound for you where he said, can't wait to, you know, play with Devontae again, which has certainly made the rounds with media. So to talk all things Jets and dive into the Aaron Rodgers of it all, very pleased to welcome in Dan Lieberfeld, publisher of Jets Confidential Magazine, also co-host of Press Coverage on SiriusXM NFL Radio, joining us via the Progressive Guest Line. Aaron Rodgers just loves to stir it up any chance he gets, even though we're trying to avoid distractions, Dan.
Yeah, he has said that, and we all know that famous quote after the season about getting all the BS out of the building and the focus needs to be on football. I don't know why he is incapable of just saying, you know what, that's not my job. That's Joe Douglas's job, the GM, to procure the talent. I'll leave that to him. No, he's got to create another story out of it about a player who's under contract to another team.
Yeah, and I think the AFC East is really interesting this year and a tough division to handicap because I think there's regression in Buffalo, but it's almost a bridge too far for me to get to the Jets or Miami as division winners, so I haven't dipped my toe into that market. How do you assess the AFC East stacking up this year?
Yeah, I think that obviously New England, it's a rebuilding year, and it could be pretty ugly up there, so we can rule them out. I think the Jets have a chance to take this division. I'll tell you why. Their schedule, I've been covering the Jets for about a quarter century. This is the weakest schedule I've ever seen for the New York Jets. I mean, you look, I know the opener is tough at San Francisco, but then they play Tennessee with Will Levis. I listen to Lombardi Line all the time, Stormy, so I know how you and Michael feel about Will Levis. So that's a easy game. Denver with Bo Nix. I'm not going to go down the whole schedule. The only really, really good quarterback that stands out is Josh Allen. I don't think Tua is a guy that you have to fear that much. So I just think the Jets, with this schedule and with this roster, even with question marks you have about the team, there's no excuse for them not to compete for the division.
And Dan, they are a big favorite to go over their season win total this year. They're a big number to make the playoffs as well, something they haven't done in the last 13 straight seasons. And there are a lot of expectations with Aaron Rodgers coming back healthy and some of the pieces that they have added around him, whether it be offensive skill positions or, of course, that upgraded offensive line. What for you, though, would you call the threshold for success for the Jets this year? Because they put so many eggs in this Aaron Rodgers basket. Like, is it an NFC title game? Is that where they need to go for this to be a successful season? Or if not, what's a success and what's failure?
Well, considering they've missed the playoffs 13 years in a row, which is the current high in professional sports, tied with the Buffalo Sabres in the NHL, I would say making the playoffs would be an accomplishment. However, we all know the NFL is about windows when you have guys locked up in a cap sport. Remember that draft they had a couple of years ago where people were saying it could be one of the best drafts in recent memory with Sauce Gardner and with Garrett Wilson and with Jermaine Johnson and with Breece Hall? Well, those guys are entering their third year. We all know the trend in the NFL with first-round picks looking for new deals after year three. So with that being the case and these guys all locked up on cap-friendly rookie deals, that's another reason the Jets need to take advantage of this year. Also, Aaron Rodgers, he might say he wants to play 2, 3, 4 more years. Let's see him play this year first. Let's see how he does. Let's see how he is physically. So you don't know what the window for Aaron Rodgers is like. So weak schedule they need to take advantage of. Aaron Rodgers being in the building need to take advantage of. And the fearsome foursome from the 2022 draft, those guys are going to have to get paid pretty soon, but they're not going to ask for that this year. So they need to take advantage of that.
And originally I'm from Iowa, and we had Breece Hall here for the draft, although down the street because he wasn't 21 yet. He was at the D. Do you feel Breece will be 100% for week one of the season? And what's his ceiling here? Could he be the NFL's leading rusher this year?
If this offensive line comes together, and that's a whole other topic as far as staying healthy, you know, with Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses, the bookend tackles, both coming off injuries. Tyron Smith has not played a complete season at left tackle since 2016. Morgan Moses has been pretty healthy over the years at right tackle, but tore a pec muscle last year in Baltimore. If that line stays together, because I think the interior could be outstanding. Joe Tippmann is a rising star at the center position, rare size for that spot. Elijah Vera Tucker coming back at guard, and that's where he needs to play at guard. They toyed with him at tackle. He's an average tackle, but an excellent guard. And when you look at that line, and it could be a really, really good one. And they signed John Simpson, who I was leaving out the guard, coming over from Baltimore. So if that line stays healthy, no doubt Breece Hall could challenge for the rushing title because he's got the talent. And on paper, that's a pretty good line.
Dan, it's so funny, though. I feel like that line, if XYZ stays healthy, then this team could be great. But that's such a big question, right? But with that in mind, let's say everything goes to plan for the Jets this year. They have a great season. They make the playoffs. All of the good things happen. Robert Saleh is among the shorter shots on the board for coach of the year this year. If everything goes right for them, do you think Saleh gets the credit? Or is this because of Rodgers and the impact he has? Is he getting all of the credit for this?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's say they go 12-5, but people get the sense, you know, it's Rodgers driven more than the coach. Would he win coach of the year considering, you know, the three seasons they're coming off of under Robert Saleh, which were not great? Would he get coach of the year? Or would they give Rodgers all the credit? you know, there are questions about the head coach. There are questions about the offensive coordinator. But you know what? When you have one of those guys at quarterback, I mean, look at the Cincinnati Bengals. How long were we questioning them and wondering what kind of organization are they as far as how they're run? Are they too cheap? Do they spend enough money? All that stuff. All of a sudden, Joe Burrow is in the building and nobody's questioning the personnel department or questioning the ownership or the head coach. So I think it could be that kind of year with the Jets where you might not love Saleh as a coach, but they could go 12-5 because I can't emphasize enough. The schedule is so weak and they have the band together this year as far as a lot of good players under contract. So yeah, if they go 12-5, but people think it's Rodgers, I'll throw it back to you guys. You guys are the gambling experts. Will 12-5 get him coach of the year? Or will people say, well, Rodgers was the reason?
I think the front office will get the credit. I do, because I think they'll say they put this team together for him, for Rodgers, brought Rodgers in and then built around him. And I think Saleh has so much struggles with the media that I don't know that he carries enough goodwill or credibility that at 12-5 he would get the votes.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the struggles with the media, because they might seem like struggles as far as the perception that some of the answers aren't ideal for crisis situations. However, the local media really likes him. He's very cooperative. He's, you know, one thing about Mike, one thing about great quotes, and Stormy, you know this too, they might not work out well for the organization. There might be a bad optic, but it's really good for the writers that cover the team. So it's interesting. I don't know. Maybe you're talking more from a national perspective, but the beat writers really like Robert Saleh.
So that's interesting, Dan. And I know, because I saw you tweet about it, that you've been watching the Giants Hard Knocks as well. I love that moment in the last episode where you see the senior director of communications talking with Joe Shane through the potential questions that are going to come his way in a press conference. My first thought was, Robert Saleh has that guy too. How does he not perform better in the media press conferences each and every week? Like, he knows what questions are coming.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing, and I'm sure the thing that's fresh in your mind is how the Aaron Rodgers absence from the mandatory minicamp was handled. Now, there's a couple ways to look at that. Like, perhaps get ahead of the story and get it out to the media a couple weeks earlier so it's not this big shock that disrupts the minicamp, becomes the big story. Say, you know what, he's been here the whole offseason, he's got something he needs to attend to. He's not going to be there, or maybe he handles it. But I'll tell you one thing. I think Saleh is taking a little too much criticism about one thing. People say he shouldn't have said it was an unexcused absence for Aaron Rodgers if he was okay with him being away. However, they had another player who had an unexcused absence. Is the word inexcused or unexcused? Because I'm very confused now because
it's unexcused, I believe, right?
Yeah. Unexcused, inexcusable, but unexcused.
Yeah, so the point is, Hassan Reddick was also missing. That's a whole other story. I've never covered a situation where a team traded for a contract dispute.
You know
that
what?
That was the first. But Saleh had to handle each of them the same way because they were both supposed to be there. So he had to, come down on both of them.
Sure, absolutely. And yeah, the Reddick situation is a whole nother animal. Dan, you're awesome. Thank you so much for the time today.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan Lieberfield, really appreciate his time there. We're going to step away from the NFL when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with Stormy Bonatoni and Mike Palm on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of our betting tools and content also available at VSiN.com. Each and every day, we have all of our VSiN show hosts, guests, and analysts with best bets available in one easy-to-find place. Updated betting splits, exclusive articles, including regular columns from our own Michael Lombardi, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. The NFL betting guide out now when you become a VSiN Pro subscriber, vsin.com/subscribe. If you haven't stopped by the website yet, now is the time. It's your one-stop shop for all things sports betting content. Mike Palm and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Let's talk a little baseball here quickly, because obviously with Michael Lombardi, an NFL executive on the program, this isn't a sport we dabble into a whole lot. So love doing Fridays with Mike, who is all in on MLB. There are 15 games today, so all 30 teams in action. No day games to sweat, but there is one you had particular interest in coming up on the evening slate.
I didn't like a lot today, Stormy. I think the Dodgers game at Detroit, which is the earliest game today, is very interesting. They get swept in Philly, and Scooble goes for the Tigers. Tigers $1.25 favorite over the Dodgers today, but we'll monitor that game in game. I like the matchup tonight between the Mariners and the Angels. Seattle coming off sweeping the Padres in San Diego. They go up the coast to play the Angels. I continue to be amazed at Tyler Anderson for the Angels. He has 16 decisions. He's 8-8. And 112 innings pitched. So he's had a tremendous year. The ERA is under 3 against Brian Wu, who has been the starter now for the Mariners here. I think this is fourth consecutive start in the rotation. Really good stuff. Watched him pitch a game in Tampa Bay a couple weeks ago. He was hitting 96 consistently, pitches down. He's another guy like Skeens. If he had enough innings, he'd fall in the rankings. His whip is 0.69. So I played the first 5 innings. Now, this is interesting because some places have it at 4.5, but you got to lay $1.30 juice, or you can go under 4 and play it at +105, is which I did. So obviously if it lands 4, I push and don't win, but I avoid paying the extra juice and actually get a little bit of a plus here. There at DraftKings, you see 135 on the juice on 4.5. So I want to isolate it there. See, Stormy, the Mariners are leading the AL West, and as a team, they're hitting .220. Which is tied for last in baseball with the White Sox, who are a million games under .500. So just think about that. Great starting pitching, but they don't hit. So they're naturally built in. Total here, 8 tonight instead of a lot of times it's 7.5. But I don't think that's fair because I think Anderson's pitched well. So under 4, first 5 is my single baseball play today. And then I have a soccer play like I did last week. By the way, we went 5-1 last week on the show.
Beautiful.
Just the Reds losing 3-2 was the only loss I had that.
Before you go to soccer, real quickly, okay. I was just going to say, I wonder if that total just ticked up because of the 11-0 final in the Thursday matchup for Seattle yesterday. Also, that game coming up, 6:30 local time, 9:30 Eastern. Angels have lost 9 of their last 11, just for reference as well. But go ahead.
Yeah, that was a lot of bullpen runs. The San Diego, it was 2-0, and then it got away. Anyhow, I'm going to go to Copa America, the final 5 o'clock on Sunday from Miami. And I think people think maybe Miami leans to Argentina because Messi plays in the MLS there. I have to tell you, these Colombia fans are everywhere. They took over the book here last Saturday against Panama, which is a public workout, 5-0. But I couldn't believe Wednesday night, was it Wednesday night or Tuesday night in Charlotte? The whole stadium was yellow. Yeah. It was 95% Colombia fans. Many more than Uruguay. I couldn't believe it. Of course, then they had the disturbance in the crowd with the Uruguay players and their families and whatever. Yeah.
So what do you know what exactly went down there? Well, I heard like they were saying they were defending their families.
They had
or
their wives and kids. Yeah. And there was a couple drunk, from what I'm reading, and accounts of people that were near there, drunk Colombia fans that were harassing their families after the final whistle. And they felt their families were in jeopardy. There wasn't security around. And they went into the stands, you know, and had fisticuffs. Many more than the Malice in the Palace. That was two guys going into the stands. But here, the bigger thing for me is we're hosting a World Cup in 2 years. We better get a hold of security at these stadiums. Are people safer going to Qatar than being in the United States for these games?
Learning lesson.
So anyhow, get to the play. I'm going to take Colombia to win it, to hoist the cup. So that means, however, whether they win it in 90 minutes, whether they win it in penalties, in added time, or they win it in penalties. However, they're going to come out victorious here. Since Nestor Lorenzo took this team over, Colombia, they're undefeated in 28 games. They have not been beaten in 28 games, which is including beating Brazil and Uruguay and Argentina. So I think Argentina is a rightful favorite, but close to a $2 favorite, no. I'll take Colombia. Now, I bet Uruguay to win the tournament. I did bet Colombia to advance as a hedge to that ticket. I'm glad I did to get off that ticket. I think this team's very good. You know, they played a whole man down for over half the game because they got the red card in the first half. By the way, congrats to Paul Carr, whose soccer bettor has been a regular on Gil's show for many years, whose handicap on that game was to bet there would be a red card. At like, I think it was like 3-1. And there was a red card in the first half from the Mexican official, who's very well respected. But it was a double yellow, and so it was a red card. So the second place, Colombia to win it on Sunday. We expect huge crowd at Stadium Swim. Of course, we have Euros, Spain and England at noon, and then 5 o'clock, Argentina and Colombia.
Yeah, and I am seeing the full $2 price right now on Argentina, Colombia plus 150. Go back to baseball a little bit because All-Star Week is ahead of us. The Home Run Derby, always the one big attraction, it feels like, of that week for Major League Baseball. It's coming up on Monday, July 15th, Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. They'll do the simulcast, too, where you have the broadcast on ESPN, and then the StatCast is well available on ESPN, too. There are a couple changes this year.
Will there be a Manning cast? Will they also be?
I wonder. There are some changes, though, this year that I wanted to get your opinion on before we get to the players specifically. But a max 40 pitches in each round per player. So they're putting an emphasis on efficiency versus speed. And then instead of the head-to-head bracket style in the first round, they're just going to take the top four players with the most home runs available. They'll advance to the semifinal bracket.
I think the significant thing is the 40 pitches. Because a lot of the handicap was which guys could get more at bats in the 3 minutes, right? More swings. Let's throw that out because once they get to 40, they're going to stop. And the bonus time goes to everybody. It's not if you hit two over 420. They tweaked a bunch of the rules. I don't object to it. I mean, let the top four home run hitters, and instead of somebody beats somebody 18-12 and somebody gets beat 30-29 or whatever.
Yeah, because was annoying in the past, like seeing somebody put up a massive number, but they come up one shy of the guy that beat them. And
what I will tell you is this, from a bookmaker's perspective, is we'll do at least four times more volume on Monday for this than we will for the game itself.
I believe that
100%. Nobody cares about the game anymore.
Correct.
The game, they don't let anybody pitch more than one inning. They wear these unisex whatever uniforms. You can't have no idea where they're from.
Yeah,
bland uniforms. Let them wear their own colorful uniforms.
Wear your own uniforms. Right? That was such a cool part visually of watching the game.
The aesthetic of it is so much worse.
Yeah, that's a missed opportunity.
So there's very little betting on the game itself.
The favorite in the Home Run Derby, Pete Alonso, 3-1. He won in 2019 and 2021, but was knocked out of the first round of last year's event. Garcia, plus 425. He'll have home field advantage. I don't know if that matters.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Alonso is the rightful favorite. I would bet him if you said you had to bet somebody, but these things are often a crapshoot, and we'll see how they adjust to the new rules. I think Jose Ramirez is a little bit of a value player, a dark horse at 13-1. That would be my two thoughts on the betting.
Highest full season home run rate of his career right now, but he's somebody with stature that I would have a question about.
I think he's very efficient in his swing. And I think that he will expend the least amount of energy in trying to hit these home runs. That's just part of my theory about how sharp of a hitter he is, and he'll convert that to this contest.
Any other names that stand out to you here?
Witt would be interesting to me, but no, not really.
Fun fact about Witt, he won a high school home run derby in 2018 at Nationals Park. I thought that was a cool little
that
nugget.
Cool.
So different level of competition, but still found that interesting. Marcel Ozuna there the camera is in the way of the exact graphic, but plus 380. Gunnar Henderson there at plus 475 as well. So an interesting list of guys. I think it'll be fun. So I wanted to do this to you because we only have about a minute left, but is there a player from the past that you would like to see, like if we did a semifinal bracket, a player from the past against a player of today's game that you think would be a cool head-to-head matchup?
Oh, that's a tough question, Stormy.
You're so great with the history, so I wanted to throw it out there.
But you're talking about today, having the contest today.
Yes.
So it has to be somebody from the very recent past, right? That can still hit home runs today.
Think Barry Bonds could do it?
He's removed from the game how many years now? Let me think about that on the break. That's a tough one.
Refresh your mind. But I was just trying to think of like some of the legends, like the big bats of yesterday's game that could compete with these big guys now.
I was thinking about like an Adam Dunn, but they're too far gone from the game. But these guys that were just feast or famine guys.
All right, think on that during the break. We are going to take a quick time out here, but when we come back to the big news of the day, lots of NFL talk ahead. We'll also hit some college football in hour two. Aaron Moore is going to stop by and join us. And I have a Las Vegas question as well, because there is a casino that is getting taken down here soon, and there's a lot of mayhem around the slot machines. We'll get into that. We'll be right back.